Do we really need another podcast? No. But Tony really needs a hobby. Hopefully, he'll put a smile on your face. And if you don't like it, at least it's free. Now grab your favorite beverage and enjoy the Bald and Witty podcast. Here's your host, founder of baldandwitty.com. Here's Tony Mahalski.
Welcome to the podcast. Got great reaction on the first one that was posted just a couple of days ago. I'd like to introduce you to the Mel Kiper Jr. of the Greater Sioux City Metro, Braden Stafford, who's currently a senior at East High. Soon we'll be venturing off where?
To the University of Iowa. Go Hawks.
And the reason why you chose Iowa?
Because it's cheap. And it's a D1 school.
A D1 school?
Respected D1 school.
Pretty good defense.
Yes.
And you're definitely more of a defensive mind than anything else.
Yeah. If I went to an offensive school, Iowa would be off my list.
Okay, so with your defensive mindset, I had to pain you to see the top picks all go on the offensive side of the ball.
Appreciate talent all sides of the ball, but it would have been nice to see an edge rusher or one of those elite corners go top 13.
So were you surprised at the amount of quarterbacks drafted? What was it, 6 of the first 12?
I was surprised by that. I wasn't surprised by the teams except for Atlanta, which surprises all. But I would have definitely thought someone would have traded up into the top 15 to grab Penix.
Over under 2 years, how long will Kirk Cousins be in Atlanta?
Who knows if he will re-injure his Achilles again.
That's true.
Or he's going to be there for a majority of his contract while mentoring Penix.
So Penix, long-term, do you think it was a wise choice by the Falcons? The night of the draft, there was so much consternation. Like, why are they doing this? Does it make sense to you from a coaching perspective?
It doesn't really make sense, like how Jordan Love didn't make sense at first. Maybe it'll pan out like how Green Bay situation did. It was kind of the wrong move for Atlanta as of now. I mean, there's definitely a good quarterback class next year if they wanted to go that route too.
Let's talk about winners and losers of the draft. In your opinion, who were some of the... Let's start with the negative side first. I like the negative.
Oh.
Tell me about the big losers who made their team worse after the draft.
Would definitely be the San Francisco 49ers. There was definitely some wide receiver talent at their pick at 31, and they chose wide receiver Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, which I thought he was maybe a late second, early third choice, and they picked him right there at the first round. They also picked up a corner, Renardo Green out of FSU. I do like their third round selection and Dominic Pooney, who's a guard out of Kansas, who could also shift to tackle as well, and Malik Mustafa out of Wake Forest, who's a safety. But besides those two picks, I don't really see how these picks are going to fit into the 49ers system.
And as we're recording this on Sunday afternoon, somewhat surprising that Brandon Ayuk didn't land somewhere else. There was a lot of trade rumors heading into the draft about Ayuk perhaps landing in Pittsburgh, potential landing spot, a couple other teams as well. Was that a surprise to you?
I don't really think it was a surprise. Their general manager, John Lynch, said that they were trying everything they can do to keep him around about a week before the draft. So, I mean, I'm not really surprised that Ayuk is still with San Fran right now.
What's another team that maybe lacked a little bit of pizzazz with the draft this past year?
People who did not live up to expectations on the draft was the Atlanta Falcons. We already talked about the pick with Michael Penix, but if you look at day two, their defensive tackle selection and Rook Oro out of Clemson. He's a great defensive tackle. I like him. He's a perfect guy who you want for the inside, but there's definitely others like Jerzon Newton was there and Braden Fisk, other defensive tackles like that. I know it's a slim defensive tackle class, but they still had guys that they could have picked at 35.
And yeah, it's interesting because they went defensive picks, second, third, fourth, fifth picks, and not until the sixth round drafting a running back. And
Jace McClellan.
Yep, the one out of Alabama.
Yeah.
Tell me about the big winners in the draft. According to you, Braden Stafford, coaching star on the rise.
All right, so my two winners are both from the great state of Pennsylvania, the Steelers, who outshined everything, and I know you really like to hear that comment.
I was pretty excited, yeah.
I liked how they beefed up their offensive line, especially with the guys that they got. Troy Fatanu, who could play anywhere on the offensive line. He's a tackle and a guard out of Washington. I really liked how he played under that Ryan Grubb offense, Kalen DeBoer in Washington there. Zach Frazier, he's an interesting guy. I thought he was going to go about 20 picks before that, maybe late first round, but they land him there. They also get Mason McCormick, who a lot of people did not have on their boards generally since he's from a smaller school at SDSU. I liked the Roman Wilson pick. They kind of need another receiver to go along with George Pickens.
And he's kind of a big physical receiver, too, which is something that's needed in the Steel City.
Yeah, and he's also fast, too. So, I mean, with those deep balls that Russell Wilson still likes to throw, he can definitely catch one. But the one pick that really outshined me was Peyton Wilson, the linebacker selection out of NC State. I was hoping that he would fall about another five picks to 102, but unfortunately that did not happen for me.
He had some injury concerns that he had to overcome. Some reporters saying that he may not have an ACL.
Yeah.
Maybe playing without one.
That's what I heard too. And a bunch of surgeries with his knees and his shoulders with all the ligaments around there.
But he does pop out the film when you watch his game tape.
Oh, yeah. You definitely know which one he is.
The other side of the Keystone State, the Eagles impressed you, too.
Yeah. I was surprised that they double-dipped in defensive back with the selection of Quinion Mitchell and my personal favorite, Cooper DeJean, who fell way too hard going in at 40th overall. I don't get the pick with Jalix Hunt out of Houston Christian. I'm not a huge small school fan. You know, I can get all the boos that people will give me, but I didn't really see much production there. Will Shipley and Anaya Smith are two offensive weapons that Jalen Hurts is going to love to have. One of them's a running back out of Clemson, and the other one's a receiver slash kick returner out of Texas A&M. Both of them have electric speed. Jeremiah Trotter Jr., you know, his father used to play for the Philadelphia Eagles as well.
So. That's right.
So that was nice there.
A legacy pick you don't often see in the NFL.
No, there was a lot of former NFL players whose sons got selected too.
And it's amazing. It's NFL players that played like 2001, which I guess is a generation removed.
Yeah.
It's just weird to see the offspring do so well in the NFL draft. So going outside of the state of Pennsylvania, what other teams really impressed you with what they did at the draft?
Well, I have a couple teams out of the state of California, and no, they're not San Francisco. We got the Chargers, who I thought did really well, selecting Joe Alt at number 5, huge offensive lineman. And then they selected three receivers throughout the draft. At number 34, they selected Ladd McConkey out of Georgia.
Oh, man, he is fun to watch, too.
He was really fun to watch. I loved watching his film. They also selected Brendan Rice, who is Jerry Rice's son out of USC there. I mean, he only has to travel across town just to get to his new playing spot.
Which offspring is more of a career in sports? Is it the son of Jerry Rice or the son of LeBron James?
I think we're way too early to decide on that right now.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah.
Come on, put yourself out there. Come on, it's a podcast. We're going to clip this audio and have it for the rest of our lives.
Yes, we will. And then Cornelius Johnson along with him from Michigan.
So we talked about the four teams that impressed you, the two that maybe had a little more work to do on the draft. Let's hit home with you. I know you're a big Seahawks fan. Breakdown, how did your Seahawks do? Now, we had some interaction during the draft. It seemed like you were a little disappointed.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed with Seattle. I had a lot of my favorites picked, and Seattle surprised me by picking none of them. I had a huge list of about 150 players who I would have really liked to see go up to the Pacific Northwest, and none of them stuck. But I did hear a lot of good things about our first overall pick, Byron Murphy, out of the University of Texas. And he was a big part of that defense with Javon J. Sweat that went all the way to the semifinals for the college football playoffs.
It was funny. The top six teams in the polls were also the top six teams with the draft picks, too.
The one favorite that I had that actually went to Seattle was guard Christian Haynes out of UConn that we took with the 81st overall pick. He's a very physical right guard, and he'd fit right in perfectly with Ryan Grubb's style of offense and him being an offensive coach himself. A.J. Barner, I like him at that pick. That's probably the one that, out of the entire draft, I said kind of fit perfectly.
And Barner's a tight end out of Michigan, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And so he kind of knows what Mike McDonald's all about, even though he didn't work with him directly while he was a defensive coordinator there at Michigan. And then the two Auburn corners, Nehemiah Pritchett and DJ James. I hear they are just tall and lengthy and really physical
corners. So the Legion of Boom is back.
In the form of Auburn corners, yes.
All right, here's some of the stats. The team with the most draft picks, it was a two-way tie. Michigan and Washington each had 7. Alabama, Florida State, Georgia each had 6. And Longhorns with 5. And those six teams represented the six teams in the final college football playoff rankings as well. So it's sometimes it's not about the X's and O's. Sometimes it's about the Jimmy and Joes.
Yes, it is.
And as we talk about philosophy, let's talk a moment about what your coaching philosophy is.
Yeah, so I elaborated on it the last episode. And if you have not listened to the last episode, I very highly recommend listening to it right now. Pause everything that you're doing. You'll listen to it right now. But I elaborated that I'm a big Disguise fan. You know, at cover two, a lot of people don't know what the covers are, but essentially cover two is you got two deep safeties. Cover three, you got three deep guys. Cover four, I really like mixing up linebacker roles too. You know, online, offline, if he's rushing, he's not, Disguise, you know, a bunch of different things. And I definitely think that the nickel position, the nickel corner position, could definitely serve a lot as some disguises and could be used on some blitz plays as well.
Someone who made a big impact on the defensive side of the ball from the Iowa Hawkeyes, Cooper DeJean, ended up going to the Eagles a little later than a lot of the experts expected. I think Medi gave him a first-round grade. Why do you think he slipped down to, what, pick 40?
Yeah, I think it was mainly because of the injury. I mean, all the accolades add up to maybe even a top 15 pick. If he just didn't suffer that injury last year, he would have been out there on the stage receiving a jersey and maybe, just maybe, giving a bear hug to the commissioner.
It's kind of funny. It's been popping up recently on X and some other platforms. Have you seen his high school basketball highlights?
Yes.
He's amazing.
Yeah. He can jump. That's definitely for sure. And definitely with all those dunking plays, I'm not much of the basketball fan myself, but I definitely can recognize that he was definitely a talented person at his high school.
It's nice when you have these, you know, scholar athletes that focus on more than just one sport. I think that's becoming more and more important. Just the art of competing in different sports, I think, is very helpful.
Yeah, I definitely think if you can compete in as much sports as possible, do it. He competed in football, basketball, baseball, and even track for a year, too. So his schedule was always full.
Okay, this might get under your skin a little bit, but I would like to talk about Matt Rhule for a second and how his staff has encouraged even football players to maybe dip their toe in other sports like wrestling and track. For example, Nash Hutmaker is a defensive lineman. He was encouraged to wrestle for the Husker football team. He had to drop, I think it was like 45 pounds, and put it back on the right way. And they said that he's become quicker now, and really what helped him out in wrestling will help him out on the football field. And that's kind of unusual for a D1 athlete to take on another sport in college.
I think that's a really good philosophy that he has there. I definitely know that we try to do that in high school athletics too. We definitely encourage football players to play or compete in wrestling and basketball in the winter and go out for track and field in the spring or baseball. And, you know, they come back bigger, stronger, more athletic for the next season. So, it definitely works out.
And in Nebraska, you see a lot of the receivers go out for track as well. And that's another thing where, you're only going to get quicker, which I think will probably translate to the football field too.
Yeah, I mean, it should.
Speaking of speed, how amazing will it be to watch the Chiefs and their new wide receiver pick from Texas, Xavier Worthy. And man, he is quick. Quickest 40 time ever recorded at the NFL draft.
Those deep balls are going to be crazy next year.
Oh,
With Mahomes' arm strength, and now I'm sure he can shake off a few defenders, that Worthy kid, but he will be the first ever Chiefs receiver in this decade that can actually catch a football.
That is true. And that's it's only so dangerous to be have so much speed if you can't catch the ball. But it looks like it's taped like he could catch it. So we'll see if that pans out.
Yeah, they also got another player to the receiver corps, Jared Wiley. He's a tight end out of TCU. So you could probably see a lot of 2-3 tight end looks for the Chiefs next year.
And it seems like the Chiefs have to be the leader in amount of tight ends used. It seemed like they'll roll out 2, 3, 4 in a game and use them quite often.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll expand upon that. Pretty soon you'll see the entire 11-man offense be all tight ends.
What's the one position you wish was used more offensively? Is it the fullback, tight end?
Fullbacks could be used a lot more, but I kind of translate second or third tight end as a fullback too. They
sure
can play the same exact way. Seattle had this weird scheme last year where they would have a quarterback and then a running back directly behind him, and then in the wing they would have a tight end on each side or two tight ends to one side, and they would just mainly serve as just blocking, and maybe they'll go out for a delay route. Yeah, it was definitely interesting to watch, and it really translated to how poorly we did on offense.
Okay, I like your answer, but it's wrong. Go with me on this one. And it employs the philosophy of the Atlanta Falcons. Here's what's going to happen. They have two serviceable quarterbacks, Cousins and Penix. This is the offense I would like to see in the NFL. Do you know where I'm going with this?
You're going to put both of them on the field at the same time?
Absolutely. You talk about confusing a defense. If you have two quarterbacks
who are very stationary.
Okay, they might have to trade for a third quarterback. That's a good point. Okay, so we get rid of Penix and we get him maybe a more mobile.
So you just selected a quarterback with the 8th overall pick, and you're going to trade him.
You have to deal him for someone that's a little mobile.
What kind of Eli Manning, Philip Rivers thing we got going on now?
I'm just kind of fleshing this out on the podcast, which maybe I probably should put more thought into it. But if you had two quarterbacks that complemented each other and you don't know where the ball's come from, that would be an amazing offense.
You don't think the Ravens probably thought about this already?
That's a good point. The Ravens would be a better choice. Okay, yeah. Back to the drawing board. You have all the coaching philosophy. Work on it. And then, you know, by the time East High is ready to go, you can pass on your notes. And they can implement the first two quarterback system ever in Iowa football history.
I'm sure that will go over real well.
Okay, one of the things that maybe is valued even less than my last take is... the fact that if you're a 6th or 7th round prospect, are you almost hoping that your name doesn't get called?
I mean, I would like to have the recognition of...
being drafted?
Yeah, I got selected.
Because it seems like it'd be better if you could go to a team that is in more need of your position. You can kind of cherry pick where you want to go. Because a lot of the 6th and 7th rounders don't necessarily even make the team, where the free agent signees, I think, have a better opportunity in some cases.
Yeah. I definitely think it could be an advantage to those undrafted players to go where they want.
What's the one thing you learned with your coaching philosophy that you were maybe developed over your time at East?
Well, I would say the biggest thing I learned is how to conduct a practice. When I finally got to be on the practice field, I got to see a lot of different things and how we do our practices. I would say with the philosophy, with how flexible we can be with our linebackers and edge rushers, because it never used to be like that. It used to be you're playing on the defensive line and that's what you're going to stick to, and you're playing a linebacker and that's what you're going to stick to. But I mean, we can make these guys really flexible between the different positions that they go, which I definitely like.
All right, just talking about some random football things. What is your favorite venue in college football?
I would definitely like to see a game at the Michigan Stadium.
At the Big House.
At the Big House.
Penn State would be another large venue. It'd be good. Tennessee.
Tradition there with the all-white at Penn State.
See, I think you got to throw in Touchdown Jesus, too. Notre Dame, that'd be great to see a game there. Just how much history has taken place at that stadium.
Yeah.
As we hit on the last podcast, the movie Rudy, I mean, that hits home.
Yep.
And now that we have these new teams coming into the Big Ten, I think if you're a Big Ten fan traveling to USC, UCLA, Washington, Oregon would be fascinating.
Yeah, I think it would be a little bit more of a challenge then, you know, because
hopping in your car and go to Indiana, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it was a Midwest league.
Midwest league, you could easily get to the game in less than 10, 12 hours.
Yeah, if you're going by charter bus. But now, you know, you got games at the Rose Bowl, games at the Coliseum, you got games at Oregon and Washington that you have to go to.
And plus, I want to see USC travel to the upper Midwest in late November to see what that looks like. That'd be fantastic.
It's too cold.
You're going to have to vary some of your offense strategies when you're freezing your tuchus off. All right, when it comes to the NFL stadiums, what's your favorite venue?
Oh, I would definitely love to go see the new stadiums at SoFi and Allegiant Field.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to see those.
Especially if you're a big fan of technology. It's just really popping out there. And I think that's probably more the future of the NFL, is that fan experience and how it's become much more digital and a lot more online.
A little biasy here, but I'd like to go to Lumen Field, experience the loudness of the Seattle people.
And I will say, when they designed that stadium, it looks like nothing else, which I think is what you want to do when you design a stadium.
Make it stand out.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a giant toilet bowl.
No, that's true.
Like Allegiant Stadium.
That's a good point. Let's see. I would probably go somewhere with some tradition. Lambeau Field, I think, would be my pick.
Yeah.
See, I'm kind of drawn to, you know, Notre Dame, Green Bay.
How about Lambeau Field at Wild Card Weekend? Would you still go?
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, absolutely. I can bundle. I can always put more clothes on. That's no problem.
You'd take up five seats with how much layers you'd have
like
to wear.
The Michelin Man. Yeah, that's fine. I'm ready. And then when you go to a game, what's your favorite food item? Your favorite fare? Or it could be tailgate, too.
Usually go to games. It's just whoever's closest and whatever they got. Or whoever's got the shortest line.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Unless if it's some weird foreign food, which some vendors do, but...
I like it when the city really touts what they do well. For example, if you go to Pittsburgh, they have the pastrami sandwich, and they put coleslaw on it and fries. And you may, you know, turn up your nose, but it's really indicative to that region. Primanti Brothers is the name of it. It's sold right there inside the stadium.
Because nothing sounds better like a football game than coleslaw.
That's right. I'm not saying it's the healthiest of choices for you.
My game is all about the hot dog. You know, every time you go to a ball game, you have to have a hot dog. Unless if you got, like, season tickets. But
yeah. The hot dog, then nothing says American fare better than the hot dog.
Yeah, or a cheeseburger with fries.
That's, oh, that'd be good, too.
Yeah.
Nice. So you've been around athletes both on the high school level and then with the Sioux City Bandits. Tell me about the role that music plays before the game.
Music probably plays the biggest role for influence and everything like that.
Like getting your mindset right?
Mm-hmm. I think it works a little bit better than coaches do.
That's just what coaches want to hear when they're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, right. Definitely observing it, I could definitely see. That music works better than people shouting at you at the top of their lungs. But
this is a music consumed as a team or the individual music or both.
Some people bring their headphones and listen to whatever, but more popular would be the latest in rap music.
Mm-hmm.
It goes. Yeah. And we have two huge speakers for East High, and we just crank them all the way up, and we make sure that the people in the other locker room know that we're here with our music. Especially on how Olsen Stadium was built, because you got the visitors on right below the home team. And I remember right before North game, we were the visitors, and so we had the bottom, and then we were just blasting up. We shared the same locker room hall with Ames. And
once again, thanks a lot to Braden Stafford for his time, not only today, but the time he spent before the NFL draft. And special thanks to our producer, Bo, who did a great job arranging all the details with this podcast. As we mentioned, there was a podcast recorded before.
Just shaking. Kind of like Camp Randall when Jump Around comes on.
Some insight
Wisconsin.
Into the draft, but also some fun sports topics that we recorded in a very exotic locale.
I'm a Barbie girl.
So without further delay, here's the podcast we did before the NFL draft.
Pull a little stunt and
kind of throw them off a little bit there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they ended up vibing too.
Oh, that's good. it's got some bops to it. Yeah.
It was a nice little shakeup from what we're traditionally listening to.
Okay. That's your fluff question. Now you're more hard hitting. So when it comes to mentors in the coaching profession, who do you look up to and who do you look for inspiration when it comes to philosophy on coaching?
I mean, all of them are defensive coaches basically, except for Sean McVay. I like Sean McVay a lot with his offensive strategy and everything like that. And how he shows a huge presence in every room that he walks in. But I would definitely say for more of an analytical standpoint, I'd put in Mike McDonald, who's the current head coach of the Seahawks, which is why I loved that day that we got him. And then Phil Parker, defensive coordinator at Iowa. They both got a very similar defensive strategy that would be simple to pick up if you were a part of those teams. And then for character, I would definitely say Pete Carroll and Kirk Ferentz, maybe because they're both qualified AARP members.
They have more experience. That makes sense.
Yeah. And both can get the senior discount at their local Denny's. I definitely like how Pete Carroll's whole thing about competing, always competing. He always had Russell Wilson compete with the 7th round quarterback that we just selected. Or he would always have Sherman compete with the low-level corners that we had. And I always liked that because he wanted to make sure that people always fought for their spot. and that they kept on fighting for their spot throughout the entire season, every season. That's what I like. And then just how nonchalant Kirk Ferentz is kind of why I like him too.
He seems like he's comfortable in his own skin. He can go about going his own way, and he's not easily influenced by the outside factors.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he doesn't have anything on the outside. I don't think he has a social media, so there's nothing going on there.
That's good. He just buries himself in the profession and follow your own gut, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. He has no social media nor any email. He just has his phone. I don't even know if it's like a cellular phone. It's probably a flip phone.
So what were some of your more memorable moments when it comes to high school football this past season at East?
We had two games that were really great. We had the one game we were supposed to be on the road against North here in town. We were down by 20 as soon as halftime rolled around. We didn't score our first touchdown till about 11 minutes left in the game. And then we scored another one about 5 minutes later. And then right after that, we scored our last one. We missed one of the extra points, so I had to stay tied at 20-20. But I remember I was walking up down the field. I was trying to get those guys all pumped up. It was my first game. I didn't know what my role was. I didn't know what my responsibilities were. So I just made the most of it. You know, I tried, you know, getting all them pumped up, like, hey, we just need one more score. And it's all tied. Then another one, you know, just you got to keep it just one possession at a time. You can't just look at it and say, we need to make up three touchdowns right now. You just got to keep on looking at it as of that. And then we got a bunch of interceptions. I remember we had a 60-yard touchdown that game. We sent it into overtime. North gets the ball. They pass it a couple times incomplete, and they run it for a few yards, and then they kick the field goal to make it 23-20. And then we have our turn. We do our pass play, and then we run it up, and we're at the 2-yard line, third down, and we run it up right up the middle. It seemed like it was like Moses parting the Red Sea. Our running back Miles got in there for the touchdown. It was fantastic. And we basically cleared the bleachers and started storming the field, and you could just see the blank expressions on the North sideline. Just how did we let that happen?
And what a comeback.
Yeah. And then the other game I liked was when we went to Ames. We were driving through a tornado warning.
Oh,
all,
wow.
All those counties in middle Iowa had tornado warnings. And so you could barely see outside the bus windshield. You couldn't see 5 feet in front of the bus. I don't know how they got us there safely.
And those are memories you're going to have with you the rest of your life.
Yeah, and I'm glad to get those memories from my first coaching job.
So as you look towards the future, how do you see yourself at the University of Iowa? Do you know what your role is going to be yet? Is that yet to be determined?
It's still yet to be determined. I don't know what I'm going to do this year. I started thinking about looking at assistant coaching jobs in the Iowa City area for high school, or just trying to get involved with Iowa and start freshman year and build all the way up. And that's kind of what I want to do.
Because you have your coaching certificate now, correct?
Yeah, I've had it for a year now. And so, you know, we got to keep on renewing those things. What my plan is that I'm just going to talk to whoever I can, introduce myself to the football program, and, you know, keep on bombarding their emails until they finally accept me.
To be honest, that's, I think, a skill set that's missing from a lot of individuals in your generation. So the more you can perfect that and get better at it, I think you're going to be so far ahead of the rest of the competition.
I do know a buddy of mine. He's going to SDSU, and he's already got a student coaching job.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, as a freshman. I guess he's got a little bit of a leg up, but
hey, stay in good contact. You might be filling out each other's staff one day.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, Brayton, I appreciate your contributions here, not only to talk about the NFL draft, but about your coaching philosophy. I know you're a coach on the rise, so it's fun to kind of pick your brain a little bit. So stay in touch, and hopefully we can do this in the future as well.
Yeah, I'd like to do this again.
Stafford, well done.
Thank you.
Once again, thanks a lot to Brayton Stafford for his time, not only today, but the time he spent before the NFL draft. And special thanks to our producer, Bo, who did a great job arranging all the details with this podcast. As we mentioned, there was a podcast recorded before. In case you might have missed it, this was pre-draft with some insight into the draft, but also some fun sports topics that we recorded in a very exotic locale. So without further delay, here is the podcast we did before the NFL draft. Check, check, 1, 2. Okay, that's a good level check. Stafford, 1, 2.
1, 2, 1, 2.
We're going live.
You're going live.
Oh, what are we calling this? Pigskin Philosophers?
Pigskin Philosophy.
Welcome to the first ever Pigskin Philosophy. As we're recording this live in the garage of my house, nothing says big time than the Garage Podcast. My name is Tony Michaels, and I'm very pleased to introduce to you Braden Stafford, joining us in the garage. Welcome to the garage.
Thank you. It's a very nice garage that we got here.
I was thinking it was nice there was a podcast where you eat spicy food, and then you have to continue on with the podcast. We don't have that here. We have no catering budget. No. But we do have a dirty garage filled with, actually right next to an oil spill.
Yeah, and water bottles, too.
This is perfect.
Yes.
So a little background on myself. I have about 28 years of broadcast radio experience, lots of podcasts. Braden Stafford is a coach on the rise, currently a high school senior at Sioux City East. And share with the audience your future plans.
My future plans is to go to the University of Iowa in sports management. I want to become a GA, a graduate assistant afterwards, just go through the ladder of coaching.
So you recently took an official visit to Iowa City?
Yes, I did.
And so what was that experience like? I know you had a coach's clinic there too.
I took the visit on that Friday. You know, we toured the campus while it was about 3 feet of snow out. The buses couldn't really get uphill. Toured all the buildings. And Pat McAfee was doing the show there, so I got to see a little glimpse of the Pat McAfee show from across the fieldhouse.
I tell you what, I've been watching a lot of Pat McAfee clips. He just had Caitlin Clark on. Yeah. Matter of fact, as we're recording this today, she was on. And she has a lot of energy, and I think will bring a lot of eyeballs to the WNBA. There's been a lot of talk about disparity and how much they get paid for the first year in the WNBA. You see the slotted, I think, $74,000 for the first year.
Yeah, it's around there.
But I think Caitlin will probably do fine with State Farm and some other additional sponsors.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
She's doing fine. All right, so we're going to break down some of the big topics, not only in football, but we'll kind of hit on a couple other sports as well. A week from today, as we're recording this, NFL draft. I think the main focus has been that on quarterbacks. We've been talking back and forth a lot about quarterbacks. So if you had to wager your paycheck on the success of one of these top quarterbacks, all in, no doubt, who's your pick?
Well, I wouldn't lose much money on that wager. But if I had to go for one right now, I hope this does not get clipped and sent to me 10 years from now.
Oh, it will be. Yeah. We have our producer, Bo, who will be taking care of all the clipping of this.
Yeah. On my quarterbacks, I do like... I'm not so big on the top names like Caleb Williams and Drake May and others. I'm really focused on Michael Penix out of Washington and Bo Nix out of Oregon. I think they're both really good quarterbacks and that you can get pretty good late first, early second round.
That's funny because over the last couple of days, people have talked about how the draft stock of Penix specifically has dropped. Something GMs are seeing, maybe they're not as enamored with him. What intrigues you about Penix? You know, he played in Indiana, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And he's had some injury concerns.
Yeah, I think that's the main part of it is his injuries. But when I watch his film, I really like how he just passes the football. It's got a beautiful spiral on it, and he can lay it right in the breadbasket 40, 50 yards away. He's also just mobile enough that he can get out of the pocket when need be, but he's also not like a runner constantly. They don't – Washington, not as I know of, has any design Penix runs.
So a lot of people talk about the strengths of this draft. Obviously, you have those quarterback names that pop up, Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels, probably your top three, most likely. But what position do you think has the most strength, especially in the first round?
So, I mean, in the first round, I'm seeing edge rusher, defensive line. Definitely, if you're a team that needs offensive line, this is your draft. You got a lot of great picks in offensive line. I mean, just early on, guys that I'm seeing, Joe Alt, J.C. Latham are very solid tackles. There's a guy out of Washington, Troy Fatanu. He could play tackle and guard. And then in the late first round, you got guys like Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon. He's a center there. And then you got guys like Graham Barton. He can play all five positions on the offensive line pretty fluently. He's out of Duke.
I think probably you're looking for flexibility in the offensive line. It seems like offensive line, there's been kind of a strange stance in the NFL where you have position players being moved up and down the line. Is that tough to learn a different position on the line? On the NFL setting? Because I actually spent some time looked at a practice in the NFL and how they spent so much time just on the what looked like the mundane footwork. Like, it's like a quarter of an inch off, and that's what they're solely focused on.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge step from, you know, high school level here in Iowa to collegiate level to professional level. Definitely. I was talking to a friend of mine. He plays offensive line, and he plays all five positions pretty well, but he said if he was in the NFL, he would probably stick to his one position.
It's funny how much they rep it over and over and over. If I could draw a golf analogy, do you watch much golf at all?
I don't watch much, but I'm a frequent player.
Okay. Well, since the Masters, I've been trying to pick up the game a little bit more. And Scottie Scheffler, they talked about his range philosophy. And he says, really, the first 5 to 10 minutes, I focus on the grip. And the grip is so important in golf. And you kind of forget about it, but it's the fundamentals. If the grip isn't perfect, the rest of the swing isn't there. Offensive line, you look at the footwork, and it kind of starts with the footwork. I mean, you need to be 6 foot yeah. six, 330. That probably helps.
Yeah, it really does.
But if you can dance with your feet a little bit, it's so specific in the NFL.
And I think it all evolves with that first step. I'm not much of an offensive line coach or an offensive coach in particular, but it all starts off with that first step. If you mess up your first step, you know, edge rusher, especially if you're playing tackle, edge rusher is going to blow right by you.
And the game is so fast at that level. Mm-hmm. Look at your notes. I know Stafford has about 16 pages of notes in this dimly lit garage, so this is truly a test. Is there a generational player in the first couple of rounds where you think this is a stud guaranteed and this is someone we'll be talking about, you know, in 2034?
You're going to have to give him
a minute. And not a quarterback. Quarterback is off the list.
No, quarterback is definitely...
I know you're enamored with Penix, but you have to take him off the board for this.
I focus a lot on defense. I love defensive play. So, I mean, like I said earlier, the edge rusher. I mean, if there's a draft to draft an edge rusher, this is the draft.
So who's your numero uno edge rusher?
Numero uno would be Dallas Turner out of Alabama. Some people list him as like a linebacker. He could play like a hybrid type. But how I like to look at defenses, I mean, you could play at just one position. Like if you're an edge rusher, you're an edge rusher. If you're a linebacker, you're a linebacker. I know that's not so popular anymore with all these 3-4 hybrid defenses that are going on. But Dallas Turner, he's projected about 10th pick. But this year he had 11 sacks, 11 hits, 33 hurries too. And I think he might have had a couple interceptions as well.
See, this podcast will not play well in Colin Coward's eyes because he's big about drafting those offensive weapons and he's big about those offensive coaches. When it comes to the NFL, what coach do you admire the most as someone who really just gets it offensively?
Sean McVay. Hands down.
Without
a doubt. It kind of hurts me saying that as a Seahawks fan about Sean McVay. All the coaches that has come from his tree, you know. Unfortunately, his pass game coordinator, Shane Waldron, did not work out in Seattle. My luck. But Sean McVay, him and Shanahan have basically changed the game of offense. And you can really look back into like the Bill Walsh days when he coached the 49ers because anymore, you see a lot of motions with plays. Pre-snap, so many motions. I mean, now you're seeing 2-3 motions pre-snap, and the defense just does not know what to do in those situations because you got your set.
So a lot of that's window dressing just to confuse the defense?
Sometimes it is. I mean, because defenses have like, oh yeah, if there's a 2x2, this is what we're doing, and 3x1, this is what we're doing, and it can look a lot different. And some teams are really good at adjusting that on defense.
Okay, so McVay and then other coaches that inspired by McVay that have that offensive complexity would be who?
I almost said Mike Shanahan, but Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. One that really strikes me is Matt LaFleur in Green Bay. Mike McDaniel, I think he does kind of a similar thing in Miami. And, I mean, those are just some of the few that have came from that Shanahan McVay tree.
If you get a chance, some of the back end story about the McDaniel and how he didn't do well that first coaching job, and he wasn't showing up early enough, and he wasn't focused. And sometimes in life, when you have those struggles, it wakes you up. And he pretty much sleeps at the office now. Now, going into the coaching profession, is that something that you're going to do? You're going to be all invested in 20-hour work days and. Is that something that you want to do with your life?
Yeah. I mean, I think with the profession itself, just in sports in general, you have to put in those days. You have to be alert. You have to work your, you know what, off day in and day out.
So why doesn't Belichick have a job? Because clearly he wants a job. He spoke to the Husker Clinic, the coaches clinic at Nebraska. No, he also went out to Washington as well. I think that's cool that he's given back, and I think he likes to be in the football talk. But so why is his phone not ringing? There was, what, 7 open jobs, and he wasn't a finalist really for any of them?
There was 8 open jobs. He was heavily considered for Atlanta, but Raheem Morris apparently stole the show there. But
is it age? You think it's an age thing? Or is it difficult to work with? Because obviously he knows football.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of those things. And I think, I mean, I don't want to diss on Bill Belichick because he's obviously, I mean, 6 Super Bowl wins and a Hall of Fame coach all around. I think those two reasons kind of go together for that. One, that he's 72. And I think he's also
stuck in his ways.
Yes.
Tough to deal with, yeah.
Yeah,
tough. You get the feeling like he would just take over the joint.
Yeah, and he was GM also in New England. So he was making draft picks, and I think if you strip that power away from him, I don't think it would be the same for him as it was. And I also think that he's just not in with the changing times. Some coaches just stick with their ways throughout their entire progression. And I think also with that too is that he wanted to stay in New England as long as until his final breath, probably.
Yeah. As we continue the Pigskin Philosophy podcast, thanks so much for listening. My name is Tony Michaels. That's Braden Stafford on his way to the University of Iowa. How exciting is that going to be? It's funny because I just read about the new punter that they have coming on campus. And he was getting stopped at the airport by all these rabid Hawkeye fans because punting just means more at Iowa.
Yeah, especially with Torrey Taylor. He won the Ray Guy Award, which is like best punter.
Yeah.
I definitely know the Seahawks punter Michael Dixon won that when he was at Texas. But I think people are starting to look a lot more at special teams now than ever before. And especially with all these punters and kickers coming out of Australia. Torrey Taylor's straight out of Australia. Definitely. And when I was at the Iowa practice for the coaching clinic, the guy introduced himself. Full-on Aussie, the full-on accent.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, sounds like he was straight from the Outback.
See, it would have been a great match with Jas Shelley from Nebraska, from Australia, who was drafted into the 3rd round of the WNBA draft. Which, by the way, I watched some of the WNBA draft.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, they went up, I think it was 600,000 last year, and it was 2.5 million. So there's definitely some more eyeballs on the WNBA. Okay, as we're talking about the coaching profession, it's going to be fun to follow your career as you advance through Iowa and beyond. So when it comes to just not the X's and O's, but more the mental makeup of what you think an awesome coach is, what are some coaches that come to mind that really kind of fit that bill where you go mentally, they can get this team prepared, they're ready, they got the fire? Because I was thinking about this from an NIL perspective. You've got quite the contrast. You have, in 2 bordering states, Nebraska and Iowa, 2 coaches that have different philosophies. Here's my theory. Ferentz likes to keep things behind closed doors. We're going to work on ourselves. I watched some practice of them tackling. That's all you're going to get. Matt Rhule, I think, does it for recruiting. He has these splash videos, gets you behind the curtain of what the program's like. And I think his main focus is about retention of the students he has there on the roster. And he uses some of those splash videos, I think, to entice people into Nebraska. So 2 coaches with completely different personalities and how they go about. So, Stafford, you're in the coaching profession. Mm-hmm. What approach would you take? Because it's a changing landscape now with the NIL.
Yeah, I'm more of, with any issue, I'm always a middle-of-the-road guy. If you could take the best components of the two opposing sides.
Because you almost have to have a PR spin now to recruit some of these athletes that, you know, when you're competing against USC, UCLA, Big Ten is now a national conference.
Yeah.
You've got to have some sizzle, but you also want to treat the kids good and want to make sure that they're well taken care of.
Yeah. I like Ferentz's philosophy of, a little bit of privacy in what they do. But anymore with football, that's fading away. And, Ferentz, like Belichick, he's keeping in his own ways. And I think.
Now, earlier in the pod, you called Belichick out of step and a little bit outdated. Do you have those concerns with the Hawkeye program?
Oh, boy. This
is that too much heat? It's too much heat. It's like giving you spicy food in the garage.
Yeah, you're grilling me.
I know.
But, I mean, I don't.
I think as long as you surround yourself with assistants that maybe have that willingness to kind of push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah. I think Ferentz is, I wouldn't say he's out of step. I'll just say he's in his own ways a little bit. But I definitely think with his defensive coordinator, Phil Parker, he's in line with every single thing that's happening. And I think with this new offensive coordinator, definitely what I've heard, he's going to try to incorporate some of the things he learned under Matt LaFleur into his offense.
And you can compare that then with Colorado, which just seems like a hot mess where the recruits are being shuttled through the Deion's kids that are taking direct messages from possible recruits that are coming in. And he has absolutely no one signed for the 2025 class. It's all about this year and this roster. And you look at that and, ooh, I mean, that's going to be a case study for how a program is built like this because no one else has done it this way.
Yeah, it's very interesting with what Coach Prime, trademark, is doing. I mean, I was definitely all for him when he was going to Colorado, and I watched the first few games, and they're looking really hot for a second. I'm thinking, huh, this is actually going to pan out and do something, and then they just start slipping, and soon before you know it, they lost like their last five straight and stuff like that. And it's just, yeah, I hope he does really good this year. I just don't know why it's not working.
Hey, he makes good TV. Much like Caitlin Clark with basketball, he brought the eyeballs to college football, especially at the beginning of the season last year.
Yeah, he really did.
Okay, this is maybe away from the X's and O's. Let's talk about feelings and how we're feeling in the garage here this evening. What draws you to the sport of football?
Oh, man.
I mean, obviously, it's probably the best televised sport. I'm a huge baseball fan, but even with the pitch clock, it's for an older demographic.
Yeah.
To me, football just plays out in the TV, and it's so pretty, and it's concise. You have a 3-hour commitment for the game, which you can easily do. You know, baseball, even with the time clock, is speeded up, but I just think it's the perfect TV product.
It really is, and the charts show it too. I was looking at something. It said top 100 watched 2023 programs, 96 of them were football games.
Wow.
Collegiate and professional football. And the other ones were like State of the Union address and
sure,
boring stuff like that. But, but definitely, football is definitely one of the more, if not the most, entertaining sport to watch. I mean, just the pads colliding, you know, balls in the air, all that stuff.
Do you remember your first football memory? For me, it was easy. I was a big Steelers fan. They won the Super Bowl in the 70s. And I love the Steelers. Then the next year, I was like, well, I kind of like the Raiders. And my mom took me aside. She's like, listen, Tony, we're not going to do this. You're a Steeler fan. You can't hop off one team, hop on another. Be loyal to what you like. You're Steelers. And so she kind of put me on the right path. So what was your first college football or college or NFL memory that really kind of implanted a memory in that skull of yours, Stafford?
Yeah, I remember it was the year the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. And it was a conference championship. They're going against San Fran. And my brother-in-law, he's a huge San Francisco 49ers fan. I mean, he had like a whole man cave in his basement and everything like that. You know, I just wanted to poke fun at him, you know, be rebellious against him. So I was just rooting for the Seahawks. And then, you know, Kaepernick's got the ball at the 20, and they're down by 6 points, and they need the touchdown. Richard Sherman tips the ball, and Malcolm Smith comes up with the football in the end zone, ends the game for them. And then I remember we were invited back to watch the Super Bowl, and, you know, I mean, 43-8, can't really get much better if your team's in the Super Bowl than that.
God, that's great. All these memories of when the Seahawks were a relevant football team.
But yeah, I fell in love with all those secondary players like Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas III and Cam Chancellor, and kind of what focus me on why I'm such a defensive-oriented person and why I like the secondary so much.
Okay, take a little drink of the honesty Kool-Aid here. I mean, obviously,
Do you have high hopes for the Seahawks this year?
As long as Geno Smith's the starting quarterback and we have an offensive and we
Because you need a stud at quarterback and Geno's not it, right?
He's a great guy. He could definitely be like the Nick Foles situation, but
I was thinking a great guy, Kirk Cousins. He's a great guy too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, he's a really good team leader. And I think under Pete Carroll, that's how he got to be that way.
Yeah.
And you know, it started, you know, resulting in his product on the field. But I think he's not the long term solution. I mean, right now he's I think 33 and we're paying him $35 million to, you know, play quarterback.
You ain't paying him nothing.
No. compared to the market right now, we were paying Russell Wilson the exact same thing when he was in Seattle.
Yeah.
But I think
that's going to be interesting soap opera in Pittsburgh this year too.
Yeah.
Watch not only Russell but then Justin Fields, and that whole soap opera is going to be just amazing to watch. And you still have one eye on the eastern side of the state and Kenny Pickett. And will he get any reps as the number two in Philly? Is he a head case?
Oh.
I mean, because I think he played that. That was a strange deal where he could have very easily been the number two. Russell is older, and he could have outplayed Russell as the season went on. He gets the Boo Birds there at Acrisure Stadium. He could have been in the mix. And it seemed like an odd deal just to escape to Philly.
Yeah, I do want to point out it's really hard not to call Pittsburgh Stadium Heinz Field anymore.
I know, yeah.
But
although they did take the money and they invested in some high school fields around Pittsburgh.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, so the Heinz is spreading the dough elsewhere.
Yeah. Put giant ketchup bottles in each end zone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That just says football.
Yeah, ketchup mustard.
Although hot dog, you can't go ketchup on a hot dog.
Oh, man. That's something where we disagree.
You like ketchup on the hot dog?
I love ketchup on the hot dog.
Oh,
it's
no.
It's a classic hot dog.
You're doing hot dog wrong, man. That's terrible.
I don't like those people that stack all the condiments on their hot dog, and it's more ketchup, mustard, relish than hot dog.
Okay, since we've kind of went off the deep end here, favorite sports movie of all time? I have three in my personal collection. I'll go reverse order. At number three, this podcast will probably be the only one that mentions this movie. It's a sand volleyball movie called Side Out. C. Thomas Howell is amazing at it. You've never heard of it, I can tell. Is it dated? Yeah, it's dated. It's amazing.
All great sports movies are dated.
They are. Mm-hmm. They're a moment in time. Mm-hmm. So Side Out, C. Thomas Howell played Pony Boy in Outsiders.
Oh,
that's
he
a
did.
Reference for you. Yeah. From 1983. Love okay, number two. Sandlot.
Yes, that's one of mine too.
Oh, because you know baseball and with kiddos and it just floats so well. It started that love for baseball for me. Mm-hmm. And then number one, it is a college football movie. I'm a Husker fan, raised Catholic.
That's the movie title?
No. I'm giving you clues. So I'm a Husker fan. Okay. But there's no Husker movies.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple on YouTube, I guess.
Life and Story of Tom Osborne.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. It's all the stuff in the 90s. Yeah. But this is college football. I'm Catholic. There's only one Catholic institution that has a fantastic college football program. Have you heard of Rudy?
Yes.
Rudy!
Yeah, we just watched that in English class.
You watched that in English class?
We watched it in English class.
Why?
I don't know, but a movie day is a great day for me.
The slow clap gets me every time, and it's about the underdog, undersized, you're 5 foot nothing. Oh, I just love that. So that's my top three. Any favorite movies that make your list and maybe don't make mine?
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about Rudy until now, so that's in there. I would say definitely my favorite. I'm not much of a movie watcher, you know, watching film constantly.
Favorite play of the jet sweep?
No.
No.
No. My favorite play is a nickel blitz to combat the jet sweep.
Oh, that's right. A defense guy. So, favorite movie?
This is going to be a good one, but The Waterboy with Adam Sandler.
Oh, Waterboy. That's
Bobby
good.
Boucher. Best linebacker I've ever seen on tape.
I just had a conversation with the gentleman at McDonald's who was working. I said, you know what? I think the world needs more laughter. And Waterboy checks off that box.
There was a girl I was dating, and she was a huge Adam Sandler fanatic.
Let's bring her in the garage.
Yeah.
Amber, come on in. Was it Amber?
No.
I'd be worried if it was.
And so she wanted me to watch on the Netflix movies of Adam Sandler. And so I just stumbled upon Waterboy, and I just loved it.
So why didn't that relationship work? I mean, a girl that likes Adam Sandler movies?
That's another that's another podcast episode. But I think one thing that goes underrated, not only is Adam Sandler a great actor in that, but I think the Fonz plays a great head coach.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it seems like we don't get the same amount of sports movies we had in the 80s, 90s, even around 2000.
Uh-uh.
All right, let's talk about some of the rules in the NFL that we have. First of all, do you like the brotherly shove? Are you okay with that? Defensively, how do you stop that?
Defensively, it's the hardest play to stop. I mean, I know
especially it's Jalen Hurts, who's like, what, squatting 800 pounds or whatever he does.
Yeah. I mean, I would have to look into it a lot deeper. I mean, I don't know any play that you'd have to look intensively to defend. I would just say get as much big bodies as you can possible and stack the box.
Yeah, and then probably don't allow them to get in a fourth and one situation.
Yeah, and then just, you know, have the free safety just have a running start, jump over the line.
Yeah, it's worth a shot. You saw some teams try that. I think it's funny to see how they try to defend it, and it's going to be more and more creative. I'm actually more excited defensively to see if anyone can stop it.
Yeah. I did see when the Seahawks were playing the Eagles that Bobby Wagner would sit right where Jason Kelce is, and you have your two tackles, and he was right there, and he just, as soon as the ball snapped, he would just go over and try to, but that didn't work too much.
And then kickoff rules, it's different this year.
It's a lot different this
and,
year.
Should we really be taking stuff from the XFL?
No.
Okay.
It'd be like putting a single A rule in Major League Baseball.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I do hope that Major League Baseball eventually gets the pitch box technology where you can see if it's a strike or a ball. Especially Angel Hernandez, he's a recent ump that's just been blowing it left and right. It's just not fun. When you have a ball that's 3 inches off called a strike, it just goes against everything that's...
Or when you have a ball that's, you know, not catchable, it's called a strike.
Oh, yeah. No. That's terrible. So, the new kickoff rules, you're not a big proponent.
I'm not a big proponent of. I do see why they're trying to do it.
Safety.
Yeah.
Head safety.
I think they should be investing more in, like, helmets and stuff like that. Than.
Oh, that makes sense. And why can't we get a chip in the ball to know exactly where it is on the field? Get a microchip. And so we know it's exactly at the 42.3-yard line.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that's something that's being used in, I believe, the UFL. And tennis does a great job. Thanks to our producer, Bo, for that.
Yeah.
A big contribution.
Yeah,
it only took him about 46 minutes to chime in.
His tennis trivia is coming that's in right, very yeah. handy.
Finally, we have Boris Becker back here. That's, getting to the, there is a tennis movie. I saw the trailer for it. I went to see the movie Civil War.
Okay.
Would not recommend it.
Not
good. It's like a road trip movie about photojournalists. It's not at all what
it's,
I was...
It's not about the U.S. Civil War.
It is, but the focus is... It's bad.
Yeah.
Save your money
and
invest it on a football movie that will never come out in theaters. I don't know why they're not doing football movies. This has been great. Forget about Civil War. Give me some backstory of the 2018 Seahawks team. Back when they were good.
2018.
Was that a good one?
No.
It wasn't a good one? Okay.
It stopped at the 1 yard line.
Oh, that was a great movie. Yeah. Oh. See, that would be, I'd much rather see that than Civil War.
Yeah. The Seahawks dynasty, if you want to call it, stopped at the 1 yard line by Malcolm Butler. But, it's just.
Tennis movie featuring Zendaya. She's a singer. She's quite attractive. And, I think there's a love triangle. So
I think she's a little overrated.
Is she really? Zendaya?
I don't know. I just don't see why everyone's all... But
I see the trailer.
But I don't follow pop culture.
You don't?
I'm pop culture illiterate.
Well, that's because you're always buried in a playbook.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
And
this
my
is
own.
Not helping your game with the ladies, you know? Because you turned away a relationship with the Adam Sandler lover. And then, you're always going to be committed to 20 hours inside a football office. That's not going to be much fun.
No.
Have you thought about these things as we go forward in life?
No, I've never thought about
your quality of life.
My No, I've always thought about relationship and career separately. I've never thought about them intertwined.
Oh, yeah.
And how they would conflict. Yeah,
you get that.
That's what everyone says.
That's good. That's why we're doing this podcast. It's more of a therapy session for both of us.
It's getting my name out there, you know.
Could also be the fumes from the gas mower that's about 2 feet behind you.
Yeah.
And we don't have the garage door open, which is probably a mistake. Okay. We're heading down the final stretch of Pigskin Philosophy with Braden Stafford and myself, Tony Michaels. And, of course, the draft has our attention. This is something that you really have a keen interest in. You've been working on your draft board for how long?
Since about Christmas.
Since Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay, so who's your favorite player? Maybe one that's off the radar a little bit that we talked about, the edge rusher. I forgot his name.
Dallas Turner.
Dallas Turner.
And another edge rusher that I really like that could fall is Liatu Latu out of UCLA. Really lengthy guy, really fast, get off the edge, get to the quarterback. He made Caleb Williams look like a bum, in my opinion.
I'm not totally sold on Caleb Williams.
No, me neither.
I think that's a risk, and maybe it's because the Bears are involved. I just don't see them having success in anything. It's like a team that can't have nice things.
Yeah. This is why we can't have nice things.
Okay, some other players kind of keep an eye for that you really enjoy.
I like the linebackers this year. Another, I think any defensive position is, if you need one, draft it now. Maybe not defensive tackle so much. I'm looking at linebackers, and if I had a draft crush on anybody, it is Peyton Wilson out of North Carolina State. He is something else. Let me just pull up his statistics. So last year, and Bo, you can fact check me on this too. Last year, he had 138 total tackles.
And he was an ACC player of the year, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was player of the year.
ACC player of the year. He had 6 sacks, 1 forced fumble, and 3 picks, and one of them went to the house too. So not only can he play in that coverage area, but he can also get to the quarterback when need be. And he's really good on, quarterbacks extending plays, getting out of the pocket, rushing, and he's really good at getting them home. And I think he would be a perfect player for Seattle.
It's funny, I subscribed to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and they had a story, it was about 3-4 days ago, where Cooper DeJean was looking at the Steeler facilities. I know the next day he was in Seattle.
Yes.
So Cooper, of course, Hawkeye ties. And he's so fast. What, 4'6"?
That was a 4'4"3.
Oh, 4'4"3. I'm underselling him.
Okay. I know. Yeah. Just coming off a broken leg, too.
And the kickoffs are still in play, so I assume he'd be a specialist there as well.
Yeah. He's a better punt returner than he is a kick returner. Obviously, with the one against Minnesota that was unfairly called off.
I don't think that counted.
No, that did not count. Yeah.
Just fact checking. Wait, did it count? No, it did not count. Nope.
He's out. But yeah, Cooper DeJean is another guy that I really like. He should be going around. Well, Pittsburgh's picking 20, and he should be going around 20 to 25.
Pittsburgh, they have a lot of needs. Obviously, wide receiver, there is some talk about maybe getting Brandon Ayuk, but that's apparently not going to happen now as of this recording. Maybe that'll change. Obviously, offensive line is a huge concern for him. They talked to Cooper too, so, and a lot of that could be smoke too, just to kind of throw off teams.
Yeah, if they definitely want offensive line, it's there, any part of the first round.
The one from Georgia, is it Georgia?
Yeah, there's one from Georgia. His name,
always go with the Georgia offensive lineman,
Amarius Mims.
That's the one.
Yep, he's a tackle out of Georgia. He was one of my favorites. Yes, he was. He was one of my favorites when scouting him a long time ago.
So that will potentially keep Russell up for another couple of downs before he's running for his life.
Yeah. And he runs like an old man, too, so he doesn't have much juice left in him.
Well, Kenny Pickett, when he was in there, he definitely was running for his life, too. So definitely an area of concern.
According to PFF, he's ranked 20th. So he's right in line with Pittsburgh if they want to draft him. But, I definitely see Pittsburgh being a trading partner for Seattle if need be. I think the strategy for Seattle is to trade down because they do not have a second round pick. They just traded one of their third round picks and a fifth round pick for a fourth and a sixth in Sam Howell. Yeah, no. That gave me a gave me a mini heart attack.
Okay, so when it comes to your coaching philosophy, as you kind of embark. Of course, you spend some time with the Sioux City Bandits, East High football team, and you'll obviously be experiencing new things at the University of Iowa. So at this juncture in your life, what's your coaching philosophy?
Well, right now my defensive philosophy is a bunch of disguise looks, you know, looking like you're in cover two, cover four, switching to a cover three, vice versa, cover three into cover two. I like what Mike McDonald did a lot with the Ravens, and I think it's the best hire that Seattle could have had, where he would bring down his safety, Geno Stone, into the curl flat zone. So instead of being up high, he'd be in the middle, down low. And he'd also move one of his other safeties, Kyle Hamilton, who's become a big name now due to McDonald. He would bring him into the nickel slot, and he'd often bring him on blitzes, put him out in deep zones, mid-range zones, flats. That's what I like. And I also like disguising blitzes. You know, you got a linebacker coming up here looking like he's going to blitz. He's going to back off and have the other one come. That's also what I like. I also like involving safety blitzes. I also like involving corner blitzes. And so everything with that.
So when you're looking for different colleges, I assume their defensive philosophy played into where you wanted to go?
Yeah, and Phil Parker's kind of hits on that. Like I was saying, he's kind of in with the times in terms of defense. I think Iowa's defense looks a lot different, you know, from a few years ago than it does now. It's still producing big results. One of Phil Parker's huge things is eliminating explosive plays. I think they only had like one explosive play against them all season last year, only one 20-yard run. It's a really good thing to go by, too. And he's also looking for how do you create turnovers? Because if you can create turnovers...
If you can draw a comparison to college basketball, for example, Alabama, they said, we're going to get layups, we're going to shoot threes. And that's what we're doing. Mid-range, that's not us. That's not what we're doing. And then other teams will say, we're going to give you the mid-range. If you hit those, good on you. We're going to give up something. It's the mid-range. And we're going to force you to take those contested threes and those challenge shots at the rim. And so as a coaching philosophy, you probably have to look at, what am I willing to give up? What can I live with if they make a good play that goes, you know, for 10 yards and slowly progress down the field? That's better than those big chunk plays.
Yeah. I mean, when you're first starting, you don't know what your players can really do. I mean, you've seen film, but you don't know their exact potential until you're out there on the practice field and game days as well. And then from there, you can assess, you know, what's the stats say? What are we good at? What are we bad at? Can we give up a little bit on what we're good at in order to get what we're bad at to a better level and all that? Each coach has something called key performance indicators, so KPIs. And so they look at the stats and they see what they need to fix. And so they adjust maybe a week to it, depending on the opponent, or they adjust their entire season to focus on, yeah, we need to get better at eliminating these explosive plays, or we need to get better at getting to the quarterback or in coverage or whatever the case may be.
All right. This has been the Pigskin Philosophy, and we invite you to tune in. If you like this podcast, we plan on doing this again after the draft to give you a rundown of some of those key decisions that will really shape how your favorite team looks moving into next year.
Yes.
And I assume that's probably your favorite time of the year, the draft?
I like the draft.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take off work for it. I take the entire weekend off. I need to make sure I'm up to every single pick. And then these things look like a huge twister board after everything else. And like, oh yeah, he went 27th to whoever, and he went over here and all that stuff. And so then I chart like where all my favorite players went, and
I occasionally talk to some people and they say, I'm not really big into sports. I'm like, what a wasted opportunity. Because how much sports gives you when it comes to joy and just experiencing the moment. And then talking about those buddies, maybe. Like, I know you're going to Iowa. I'm going to root against your team as a Husker fan. And you likewise. It's just those fun, natural rivalries that make sports fun. And I think great fodder for movies and just part of the fabric of our society.
I love the traditional rivalries until someone gets thrown through a window.
Yeah, that's right. It's a Pigskin Philosophy. Braden Stafford, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And please, help yourself to a parting gift from the garage.
Oh, yes. I'll take Bo's golf set.
Yeah, he doesn't use it anyway, so.
I'll take all your golf balls, though.